White Sox Weekly, Sox the win, official Sox weekly Sox talk win. Show covering all things White Sox baseball.
Get the fireworks ready.
White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back to the second half of White Sox Weekly this afternoon. We've actually had kind of a lot of fun. At least I have. Hope you have too. 312-591-8900 is the phone number here on the show. You can always hit us on Twitter at C1McKnight is the Twitter handle. We use that for the mailbag portion of this show. Don't know that we're going to have a mailbag today only because we're packed, absolutely stacked up with other stuff and interviews and stuff that we want to get to that we kind of cultivated over the very brief homestand, the very brief and rainy homestand. My goodness. But we got all those games in, which is a good thing. The White Sox took 3 of 4 from the Tigers and then lost 2 of 3 from the Red Sox to the Red Sox, I suppose would be the proper preposition there. And then we've got a couple games coming up with the Tigers here. Another 10-day road trip for the White Sox. They have not played the most road games in baseball. In fact, the Tigers have played more, but they've played a lot of road games so far. You'll see your White Sox at Guaranteed Rate Field for almost, I think it's like all of June. Just move the schedule away from me. Almost all of June and almost all of, of August and September. It is June. all of August and all of September, the White Sox are home at Guaranteed Rate Field. So a great chance to get yourself out and see that ball club. And I don't think it'll be a surprise to anyone if, possibly, some of the White Sox that are playing in August and into September, especially once the rosters expand, that some of the guys in the minor leagues, some of those big-time prospects may, in fact, strapping on White Sox jerseys and playing a Guaranteed Rate Field and getting their first or perhaps second little cup of coffee at the big league level. We'll get into the minor league report a little bit later on in the show, perhaps in the last segment, right before we kick it over to the pregame show and shift ourselves into the sports studios here at WLS AM 890. Have a couple of things up on the list. On deck, Jason Benetti, and he is very much metaphorically on deck for the White Sox. He's going to fill in full-time. I shouldn't say fill in. He has been named Hawks replacement successor to the broadcast booth. I like Jason a lot. He has a standing invitation to White Sox Weekly. He's like one of three people who have standing invitations to White Sox Weekly. It's Jason Benetti. It's Mr. Jerry Reinsdorf, of course, obviously, Mr. Jerry Reinsdorf. And Richie Sexson actually has a standing. Don't ask why. Don't ask why. He just does. 312-591-8900. Is the phone number. Minor league report coming up. Jason Benetti in a couple. I sat down with Adam Engel in the dugout, and we talked about life and baseball and whatnot. We'll bring you that about 1:45 or so. And the Major League Draft is here pretty much. I mean, it's a week or so away. Nick Hostetler, who runs the minor league draft, or the amateur draft, I should say, my apologies, the amateur draft for the White Sox, had a press conference, talked with some people, some beat reporters. And I know we talked with Nick a couple of weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago or so. And that was just prior to when we sat down with Nick. I think the general kind of outlook, the general here's where we're at sort of thing is there's this list. We have a list of players. We've gotten it down to a pretty manageable number for, you know, that pick at 11, that first pick the White Sox have at 11. And now I think it's really started to get distilled. I think the picture has really become much more clear. And it usually does right about this time, because not to say that there can't be surprises at come draft time, because the fact that Carlos Rodon went to 3 to the White Sox was, I never saw it coming. That he should have gone 1-1. It absolutely should have. The fact that he went to 3 was unbelievable. And there are other surprises. Guys kind of move around a little bit, even across town. Kyle Schwarber having gone 4 when he did. Nobody thought that the Cubs would go to that point with Kyle Schwarber, who was at that point not considered all that versatile a player, pretty much just a bat. So there are some moves, but by and large, those first 15-ish, almost 20-ish picks are kind of choreographed. People know, in the industry, I mean, where teams are likely looking to go. And I think, you know, Nick kind of mentioned there's a pretty good idea of where things may fall. You know, teams like to play things close to the vest, and it's a draft, so there could be surprises. But I think there's a much better sense now than there was even 3 weeks ago when we talked with Nick Hostetler, so we'll do that coming up. Right now, though, had a chance to sit down with Jason Benetti after Hawk Harrelson had his press conference. Jason talked for about 4 or 5 minutes or so, and, you know, he just has a different – he has a different background than people who have typically called Major League Baseball games for – and I mean that in every way. I think Jason would mention that himself. And in fact, does. His influence is where he's coming from. There aren't many. And I can tell you this as a fact. There aren't many people in this industry, the broadcasting industry, who get to work for the team they grew up rooting for. And in a very real way, I would say every broadcaster has their fandom change drastically over the course of their career. You're not a fan in the same way you were when you weren't doing this. You can't do this well and be the same guy more or less, with the exception of former players. I'm just talking about the broadcasters here. The guys who didn't play major league ball. The guys who never got a cup of coffee, anything like that. The guys who got cut from their high school team. I won't mention names. But for Jason to be in the spot where he's in is remarkable in just about every way you could probably fathom. And I thought it'd be cool to listen to a couple minutes of Jason with reporters just on Wednesday about his taking over for Hawk Harrelson.
This is amazing. And to do it in conjunction with Hawk Harrelson and Steve Stone, guys that you watch for years and know what they do, and there's a part of them inside of you, it's pretty cool.
This is such a dream realized that you have to pinch yourself saying, it's really happening.
Like I said, when I got the job, it's the odds of something like this happening even for 5 games are so infinitesimally small that if you pin your life hopes to something like that, you're probably going to be disappointed. But yeah, there's a piece of me that says you never think that this is going to happen. You actually lose the idea that it could happen, considering what you see as an adult. And somehow it did.
In your broadcast, you seem to have the ability to entertain yourself and your audience as well as inform. How difficult is that to do?
You didn't mention Steve. I evidently have a great difficulty entertaining Steve. I love to laugh, but I also love seeing the way baseball takes anybody's mind. Anybody sitting in the crowd is using baseball as a springboard to talk about something, whether it's some other piece of the game, some player they remember, whatever it might be. That's what we try to do upstairs, and that's why it's such great fun for me and for Steve and our entire crew.
Jason, this organization is building hopefully to go back to the top of the mountain like it was in 05. You're going to grow along with it. How exciting is it that the best years are still right in front of you right now?
I've never been mountain climbing. I imagine that it would not be terribly easy, but I'm excited to watch this team grow. I really am. In all seriousness, this is unbelievable timing, considering the guys that are in that spring training clubhouse for the first time are there right around when I got there. So I can watch them as they grow, as you all will, as the fans will, and get to know them from day one. And to be able to do that with this new batch of players is an outstanding opportunity.
Will you still be able to do your ESPN stuff?
That's the plan, absolutely, yeah.
College?
Yeah, that's the plan.
You mentioned Hawk and Steve. What have you learned from them since you started this with them?
Oh, the learning started years ago. Just watching baseball games. I mean, I used to go around elementary school doing a Hawk impersonation, you know? I've since mothballed the Hawk impersonation.
Can you do it? Can you do it?
I can, but I won't. He's such a wonderful entertainer and person who loves the game so much. And to not feel that as a kid would mean I had a heart of stone. I mean, he is, pardon the pun, on Steve there. He's such an entertainer and he's such a lover of the game. To grow up watching Hawk, I think, made me realize that you can have fun on the air. You can enjoy the game for what it is and beyond. And Steve's analytical mind is second to none for me. But also, I think Steve doesn't get enough credit for how clear of a speaker he is, how well he conveys information to people. What he has in his mind doesn't need to come out as cleanly as it does, and that is such a skill. And I've learned a lot just sitting next to him for down that line.
When did you learn that broadcasting was entertainment as well.
When did I learn that? I think it's acquired over time. The people that I love watching, whether it be Hawk or Sean McDonough or Ian Eagle, the people I gravitate toward are the people who like to have fun and some witty conversation and, yeah, some bad jokes too. They don't all land, you learn, from people who are really good. But what they also do is call a really great game. Like, that's the whole point of it. You earn the ability to have fun by calling an impeccable game. And that's where we try and get every night, is both.
Who outside of baseball do you credit for helping you with your success?
Oh, I listen to a lot of people. I think the Giants guys are really, really good. The Fleming and Miller and Kuiper and Kruko, they're fantastic. Vin Scully, obviously, who's no longer doing the games, but Vin is... Just listening to him and the way he crafts stories is amazing. I think you all know that Len Casper has been fantastic to me on the other side of town. Pat Hughes is wonderful to listen to. I mean, I've learned a lot from just talking baseball with Farmio and DJ upstairs. And, you know, I don't get the great opportunity to listen to them because I'm working. But, you know, I grew up with John Rooney and Ed Farmer, too, and their style of doing baseball on the radio. And they're I like clicking around. I like learning from people. Ryan Lefevre from Kansas City, their TV guy, who's been around the game for so long, has been a wonderful sort of quasi-mentor to me just in how much we see Kansas City. He's shared some of his thoughts on how to prepare for games. And there are so many people who've been so genuine with their time. It's pretty neat.
That's Jason Benetti, White Sox broadcaster. A man will be in the booth for 142 games next season. Congratulations to him. And, well, congratulations to Hawk on a legendary career, to be sure. It's not over yet. 20 games, and then, of course, he'll be around as an ambassador. It'll be parts of eight decades in baseball for Hawk Harrelson. 1959, he signed his first pro contract. I think his major league debut was 63, so a couple years in the minor leagues. But still, that's pro baseball. 1959, all the way up until 2019, where he'll be an ambassador for the Sox. There aren't a lot of people. That list is short. That list is really short. And it's impressive that Hawk's going to be on it. Phone calls at 312-591-8900. A conversation with White Sox outfielder Adam Engel. He is the second most recent call-up for the White Sox after Brad Goldberg will make his first appearance in Major League Baseball this year, as he's been replaced. He will replace Michael Lanoa, who hit the disabled list today. I'm Connor McKnight. This is White Sox Weekly. We'll be right back on WLS AM 890. The Young Professionals Council is hosting its second annual Stand Up with the Sox comedy event this Thursday, June 8th at Zanies in Old Town. Comedian Pat McGann is a very funny man. Back to host the show with all proceeds benefiting White Sox charities. Visit whitesox.com/soxcomedy. whitesox.com/soxcomedy to get your tickets today. I had a conversation with White Sox outfielder Adam Engel just before the White Sox took off to go on the off day and then head to Detroit. I hadn't had a chance but once to talk to Adam in spring training, and at that point it was day three of spring training, something like that. I was going to say I didn't know him from Adam, but he actually is Adam, so that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. I mean, he was, you know, a guy who had had a good season in the minors and pulled through. The defense is there, and that's evident from the very first fly ball you watch him take. Dude is super chill. He just knows where that ball's headed. That is an instinctive outfielder. Bat's coming around some. We talked about where his hands have been, how the mechanics have changed the last year for him. By the way, Adam is due to have his first baby in just a couple of weeks, I think. His wife is very pregnant. And probably a baby on the way, so there may in fact be a trip to the paternity list for Adam, and couldn't be more excited for him for that. That's awesome. But here he is, chance to sit down with White Sox outfielder Adam Engel. So get a chance to talk to White Sox center fielder Adam Engel, just called up from AAA Charlotte. Couple of days in the bigs so far. You have not had to carry a single bag, I assume, sir. That's gotta be a good feeling being up here in the show.
Yeah, it's been pretty cool so far. We actually have our first road trip since I've been up here tomorrow, so I'm interested to see what that has in store for me.
It'll be a little different than the bus ride.
Yeah. I was talking to Sparky today, and he's like, man, you haven't traveled yet. He's like, just wait. He's like, we don't even fly the same way you guys do in AAA. So, you know, I was telling him, you know, on the field, the game's the same, but off the field, things are very different.
We talked about, you know, when you got called up, it was really early in the morning, something like 1:30 or 2:30. You played with guys who, Carson, Lucas, Ronaldo, a lot of guys, I'm probably forgetting some, who had been to the big leagues before. I got to imagine you had a chance to talk with them either when it happened or as you've come up about what to expect.
Honestly, it kind of happened so fast that I hadn't, you know, talked to them.
Sure.
As far as, you know, in this window that we've had so far, but I've talked to him, you know, especially Jacob May. He was down in Charlotte when I was there, and I got to talk to him a lot about it, a lot of the different things that you wouldn't expect to talk about. You know, with me and Jacob are really close, so I was able to talk to him about the small things like off the field stuff or whatever the case may be. So I've gotten the lowdown from him on a bunch of different things, and obviously, you know, experience is the best teacher, so as I'm up here, you know, I'm learning as I go.
I got to imagine some of the guys in this clubhouse are pretty good with young kids coming through. I was talking to Anthony Swarzak about the bullpen with all the young guys out there, and he said, you know, that there's not a lot of, you know, the hazing, there's no pink backpack, all that kind of stuff. They kind of accept you, but I imagine at the same time, you know, you understand where you're at, you understand who's in this clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of those things where you try not to talk too much or talk out of turn, whatever the case may be, and you want to make sure you're doing everything that the team asks of you, and you know, kind of see what the older guys are doing and pick up habits from them, and you know, other than that, you got to try and, you know, stay out of the way and make sure that, you know, like you're saying, know where you're at as far as some of the other guys with service time. And you know, Anthony's dead on. So far, the guys have been awesome as far as, you know, just trying to make you feel comfortable and accepted, and try and, you know, make you feel like you're part of the team pretty quickly. From what I hear, though, most of the duties come once you're on the road.
Sure, sure.
So, like I said, I might have a different story for you once we come back from Detroit. But it's all in good fun, and you know, I haven't experienced it yet, but everybody has at one point. Every rookie, I'm sure, has gone through some sort of, you know, just team building and whatever the case may be.
Our guy on the broadcast, Darren Jackson, is an old center fielder himself. He played a long time in the bigs. He saw you take Davi Garcia whistling down the line here. He saw you take one route in center field, just turn, go on a ball, catch it with ease like you'd been doing it your entire life. He is absolutely stoked about your defensive game. You were the defensive player of the system last year. Is that a calling card?
You know, that's something that I work extremely hard on every day. You know, it's not something that you just, you know, you learn and you have it forever. It's something that you're consistently working to get better at, working to stay sharp at. And that's, you know, that's one reason why I feel like I've been able to progress through the system. It's because of my defense, and it's definitely, you know, part of a huge part of my identity as a player, what I bring to the table. So, like I said, I just continue to work on it every day, and definitely understand that that's expected of me at this point.
So. The wheels, though, are a God-given gift.
Right.
I mean, we watched you go all the way around the diamond. That had to feel – I mean, you knew you were going to come around to score pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, the ball – right when the ball was hit, depending on where the right fielder was at, I knew I had a chance to score. So I knew if the ball got past the right fielder or got to the wall, I had a pretty good chance of scoring. So at that point, you just run. You know, like you're saying, that's the easy part. You just run, don't fall down.
Same distance everywhere. Yeah, don't trip. Don't run into that. What has, you know, finding your swing over the last, let's call it 12 months. Let's call it an even year, you know, from where, let's call it the start of June to all the way to last June.
Man, it's been a lot of adjustments, whether that's mental, physical, you know, approach-wise. It's been a journey to just get to know myself as a hitter and understand what works, what I got to do to get myself ready, what I got to do to help myself be consistent, what I got to do to get confidence. You know, a lot of what we do as hitters is before the game, and then once the game comes, you're just trying to repeat what you did before. So you gotta figure out what works for you. And everybody's a little bit different. A lot of guys in the big leagues, you know, they found out what they do really well, and that's what they make their money on. So every player kind of has to figure out what that is for them. And I would say the last year has been a big you know, learning experience for me. If, you know, I've always had a picture in my head of who I'm going to be when I get to the big leagues, and you know, it changes. So,
in weeks past on this show, we've talked a lot about, you know, whether it's other some prospects or whether it's with front office guys, just about how important failing is in this game, where you fail, who you're around when you fail. I wonder if, you know, as the Sox have so many young prospects with a bunch of talent like yourself, I wonder if there was, I mean, is there one night that you remember going home 0 for 7 dozen and thinking, you know, and then the light coming on the next day, the next game, the next doubleheader, you know, whatever it was?
Man, that's, it's happened a lot where you go home and you're 0 for and you're kind of like, what's going to pull me out of this? You know, and that's probably the one thing that I would advise every young player is, if you believe it's going to get better, it will. But if you don't believe it's going to get better, it probably won't. And not that that's, you know, a huge piece of advice, but it keeps you optimistic.
Makes
you know
sense.
What I mean? And, you know, even this year at the beginning of the year in Charlotte, I was struggling in Charlotte to start out the season. But never once did I even doubt the fact that it was going to turn around. You know what I mean? And that's something that you only get over years and years of playing the game and understanding the way the game works. You know, if I would have started that way, you know, maybe my first year in Pro Bowl, I don't know if my attitude would have been the same. But like you're saying, going through those failures over the years, you learn, like, for every time, you know, you're feeling like they can't get you out, there's
right.
going to be a time where you feel like you can't get a hit or you can't help the team win that night from the offensive side. And you just got to roll with the punches. And I think what gets you back on track the quickest is just a good attitude.
That is White Sox outfielder Adam Engel. Appreciate him joining the show. We talked just before they took off for Detroit. We come back after the news, a conversation with the amateur scouting director for the Sox, Nick Hostetler. Draft right around the corner. This is White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890.
Hear the Steve Dahl Show at a new time, 3 till 7 weekday afternoons on WLS AM 890.
I got a couple of predictions for you here on White Sox Weekly. On June 12th, and this much we know, the Chicago White Sox will be playing the Baltimore Orioles. Game time, 7:10 p.m. I predict our pregame show will start at 6:35. In fact, I promise you that. It will likely, or could be, Derek Holland and Alec Asher on the hill as the Orioles are in town to face the White Sox for a very quick four-game homestand. Also, that night, in the fourth inning, the White Sox will make the 11th pick in the Major League Draft. Draft starts at 6 o'clock. Game time. Wait, did I do that right? Eastern time all the way back to... Oh, okay, so it'll be right about the start of... You know, so 6 o'clock. Yeah, but right about the start of the game. Right about first pitch, the White Sox will actually also be making their first pick in the first round of the 2017 MLB Draft at number 11. I have no idea who the pick will be. The man who does is Nick Hostetler, the director of amateur scouting for the White Sox. He sat down with reporters just a couple of days ago. And really, I know we had, like we mentioned, we had Nick on a couple of weeks ago. This is an updated, fresh, brand new look at where things are at. Not the players are the same. They're still scouting the same players. But it is a new look at the where this draft is kind of set up about a week out. June 12th is day one of the MLB draft. Here is the amateur scouting director, Nick Hostetler.
Tougher draft than years past.
Yeah, it is. It is. This is an interesting draft. In the past, there's been a pretty decent gap between probably, I'd say, the first 10 or 15 to the next group. This year, the difference isn't that much. I think from 11 to 49, there's a bunch of players that are going to be very similar.
You know, everybody, you know, we've talked before, you know what other people know.
Yeah.
Do you expect any surprises to fall through to you at 11?
I think it's starting to shake out a little bit. There's been a few things that have been rumored here in the last probably 2 to 3 days that have kind of made me pause a little bit and take a closer look at a few guys. It wouldn't shock me. Some of these college pitchers are starting to wear down a little bit, which is causing some concern. Some of the high school players are starting to do some private workouts, which are starting to rise those guys as well. So if we can get one or two of those guys that we weren't expecting to go into the top 10 in there, it's going to push a few guys down. It wouldn't shock me if there's one or two that get down to us.
Presence of elite two-way players in this draft, more of a variable or less?
Yeah. I love it from my end just because I like to see a guy's athletic ability. If a guy shows me he can pitch, he can hit, whichever way we like him, really helps us to understand the more athletic the player, the more chances we're going to have to be able to fix him or help him or move him along quicker. It's nice to see. I'm not sure it's going to stay like this. I wish it would. I wish guys still played both. Kind of goes back to when they were playing Little League in high school. You know, it's the true part of the game. So that part's exciting, but I like it and wish it was more prevalent.
Can the White Sox look at a Kyle Hendricks type young pitcher and say, can we draft a guy in the top rounds here that maxes out at 88. What is that philosophy for you guys?
Yeah, and in the past we've normally been throw it harder, and hardest. With Coop and Hass and Dot in our minor league system, it gives us the utmost confidence to take that guy like a Kyle Hendricks that might not show the velocity, but in the future we think the pitch ability is there to speed through the system. And look, in this draft, in any draft, if we're able to get a guy that's a fifth starter, we're going to be really happy. It's just getting big leaguers, the percentages just isn't there. So a guy like a Hendricks or guys like Miguel Gonzalez, guys like that can just really pitch, absolutely. If we think that pitch ability is there and it rises above a guy that just throws hard, it might end up a bullpen, take that guy every day of the week.
What are you and your guys' crew from picks from last year? Hanson had 15 strikeouts the other day. Yeah. I mean, you kind of take pride in that when you see a guy come along, that maybe took a little bit of chance.
No question. We were talking about that in the room today. It was kind of one of the I was laughing. I told him it says like a Drake song where it's back to back like Jordan in 96-97. We'll take it. We got to do it again. But to see Alec just have that success for us, it's prideful. And the guy that signed him's here. Clay Overcash is here right now, and to have that success, it really justifies what we're doing. And obviously you want to be right all the time, but to be on a guy that you really had to step out and take when the industry was down on. There's puff your chest out a little bit, get excited about it.
What kind of pressure is there coming off a good draft or what's been deemed a good draft and then as part of the rebuild knowing it's an important
pressure? There's no pressure here. For me to have pressure means that outside influences affect us and it doesn't. I have a blast in this. I absolutely love doing this. This is so much fun for me. Our staff, we're up there talking players and we're talking about guys that are maybe 40th round picks and we're arguing back and forth. I love this. It's exciting for me. It gets my juices going. And for me, it's never pressure. It never is.
How often will you call Rick and Kenny and say, I need you guys to go look at this guy?
I try to limit the guys I send them to see. I don't want to waste their time. I know that they have bigger fish to fry. This big league team, the minor leagues, especially being more prevalent in the minor leagues, they're going to spend some more time there. So I tried to narrow it down a little bit. After I narrowed down the pool and sent them certain places, I did come back and I said, hey, there's one more guy I want you to go check out. So we do that. I know Rick gets tired of hearing from me. Kenny does too. Rick will still respond. Kenny doesn't respond to me. It's kind of one of those deals. So I'm used to it, but he knows, they know we're out working, they know we're out getting the right players. And the big thing is to get them in front of the right players.
Nick, is there a sense after you had a good draft that you're happy with, right?
Yeah,
trades in December and Robert, that there's some momentum going here and they kind of want to
hold on it with this? No question. This is important for us. I said it last year sitting here that each year that year's draft is the most important. It really truly means it this year because we have to continue to build. And once you get this momentum going, you're able to stock our system with players. You're able to get guys in it and get guys down to the big leagues. We start winning here. We want to keep that going. And that was the problem before is we just didn't have enough assets in our system to hold true, that to hold true throughout. So we've got to continue each year to keep pushing forward and making sure we're on the right guys that stick with our organizational philosophy.
Who's the best player overall and you're the best guy regardless of position?
Best guy regardless of position, but also at the same time, the guy that fits into what we're trying to do. We do want to limit a guy with swing and miss. We want to make sure that they're putting the ball in play. Pitchers pound the zone. I sound like a broken record with it, but it is true. It's something we believe in. We want to make sure that that's where we stick with. And we're going to take our shots. There's going to be certain times where you want to step outside the box, and you got to take a shot because if not, you're going to end up with the same type of player throughout your system, and you don't want to have that.
What type of tools have you got? Personnel, is it more geeks crunching numbers?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. We've added added a lot to our analytics department. At the same time, we've also added scouts. We've added scouts on the ground, which has been huge. It's given us, we incorporated a college closer, a college reliever scout this year that no other team has. And it's given us the ability to line the Zach Birdies of the world up. And it's been so helpful for me spending my time. He can get me in front of the right guys, and then I can turn around and spend my time on other guys that in the past I wasted some time on.
Why hasn't that been done before? Because now with baseball, there's so many that's such a premium.
Yeah, it's college baseball is going to that. College baseball is really going to, starters go 6-7 innings and the bullpen comes in. So there's been a huge value on the relief pitching.
How much has it changed as far as what a player is like, the emphasis on their background?
We have our social media department looks into Twitter pages and goes through different who they're associated with and who they might run with, not necessarily maybe even what they post. So the background work that our area scouts put in and the time that they spend, as well as all the other resources we have, it's part of the puzzle, you know, just as the analytics are and just as the player evaluation.
You see that as a really helpful, just
kind of it's huge. It kind of gives us a comfort in knowing who we're sinking our investment into. Look, these guys don't perform, you know, my kids don't go to camp, they don't, you know, they might not be in private school, whatever it may be, but we've got to continue to make sure we're minimizing our risk from the personality standpoint, the makeup standpoint.
The team just kind of went above and beyond to get Luis Robert. How comfortable are you in your position being able to go to Rick and saying we might need to go over the normal slot for this guy?
Yeah.
Because I believe in this quicker talent.
I'm more scared of Jerry than I am Rick on that. Rick usually has my back. Jerry scares me. They've been great with that. You know, and whether that's even adding staff, I've went to them last couple years, and I pushed the envelope on a few things. I've asked for a lot. They've given me every bit of it. Jerry's been great about it. Rick's been great about it. And, you know, if it calls upon us going to that threshold right before that was 4.9 or 5%, whatever the number is, I'll go to him and ask. I want to make sure it's a special player we do it on, but if we have to do it, we'll do it.
That's the White Sox director of amateur scouting, Nick Hostetler. And that last question was literally the money question. Exactly how much, how comfortable are you in maybe having to go over slot for a guy in this year's draft? I don't know if necessarily the talent is the same as in prior drafts. That kind of seems to be the consensus, but being comfortable in his ability to go over, it's impressive, also considering the expenditure on Luis Robert just a couple of weeks ago. We'll wrap things up when we come back. A little bit of the minor league report, some all-star discussion to do. A few White Sox need your help in order to get them a trip to Miami. It's more than that sounds like. I'll explain in just a few. You've got White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890. Vote today, vote tomorrow, vote White Sox for your 2017 All-Stars with the Esurance MLB All-Star Game ballot. Vote at whitesox.com/vote and catch all of the excitement in the 88th MLB All-Star Game presented by MasterCard, July 11th, live on Fox. A couple of White Sox need your help in some All-Star voting matters. The latest totals were out a couple of days ago, 2-3 days ago. So these are maybe just a little bit delayed, but I would imagine pretty solid with where they're at. Your starters in the American League from left field all the way to right field are Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, and Aaron Judge. They've got, well, I suppose they don't do left and right fielders. It's just a bunch of outfielders. But Mookie Betts, Mike Trout, and Aaron Judge. Now, Trout, of course, on the disabled list, he's got the torn ligament. So I don't think he's going to be able to play, or even if he was able, what is it, June, 2 months? Yeah, that'd be really close for Mike Trout to return from his thumb injury. In the infield, left to right, third to first, Manny Machado at third, Francisco Lindor at short, Starlin Castro of the Yankees at second base, Miguel Cabrera at first base. Now, here's where I have my bone to pick. Miguel Cabrera is very good. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the best right-handed hitters I've ever seen in my life. However, I don't know that his numbers are necessarily all-star numbers right now. Young man, name of Jose Abreu, who's had a pretty good start to the season. He is not in the top five of all-star voting right now at first base in the American League. It goes Miguel Cabrera, Yonder Alonso, who has somehow learned how to hit the ball farther than 250 feet this year. Carlos Santana, who's having kind of a typical Carlos Santana season. A lot of walks, not a great average, a lot of power. Eric Hosmer, and Yulieski Gurriel of the Astros. The Astros are fantastic. They're a great ball club. I get it. I don't know if it's a cold first 3 weeks that have scared some people off from Jose Abreu's little ballot number there. Maybe it's possible, but I think it's probably time to do your Chicago civic duty and vote early and vote often for Jose Abreu. Punch that number. I think the man may, in fact, especially if he keeps up what he's been doing the last 4 weeks. My goodness. All the pop has been on the road for Jose. That's kind of bizarre to me. 10 home runs, all of them on the road. I guess, frankly, there haven't been a lot of games at guaranteed rates, so obviously, you know, to have the opportunity is one thing and to not have it is another. Haven't had all that great a weather in Chicago when the Sox have been home. Couple of gorgeous days, don't get me wrong, but there's been a lot of rain, a handful of rainouts, some cold and windy days, and when it is windy like that, sometimes it helps at guaranteed rate, and sometimes it hurts. Sometimes it does both in the same inning. I will never understand the wind patterns there. It's absolutely bizarre. In the outfield, White Sox do have someone creeping up the number, and that's Mike Trout, of course, on top. Aaron Judge, Mookie Betts, we did that for you. 4, 5, and 6, Michael Brantley, Andrew Benintendi, and Avisail Garcia are 4, 5, and 6 there. So Avisail Garcia may have his ballot punched a number of more times, a couple more times here, to get him a trip to Miami. And why not? All right, real quickly, probably the fastest one we've ever done, the Minor League Farm Report.
What the hell's going on out here?
White Sox Weekly Farm Report.
We need a live rooster to take the curse off Jose's glove, and nobody seems to know what to get Millie or Jimmy for their wedding present.
Candlesticks always make a nice gift, and maybe we can find out where she's registered, maybe a place setting or maybe a silverware pouch.
On WLS, AM 890.
Okay, let's get to it.
Let's get to, indeed. Yoan Moncada 2-for-5 last night as the Buffalo Bisons beat the Charlotte Knights 9-4. Important in this game, though, is that Carson Fulmer went 5, gave up just 2, did walk 4, and struck out 3. It had been a couple of bumpy starts with the long ball for Carson Fulmer, so nice to see him get things back under control. Jacob May is hitting a cool 295 down in Charlotte since being sent down. Nice to see him regain some confidence there. Nicky Delmonico continues to impress. Here's the slash line for Nicky. 282 with the average. The on base is 359. Nice. Slugging 495 is Delmonico. Danny Hayes continues to slug 473 there. He's got a bunch of dingers, 12 of them, in fact. Not a great average at 245, but pretty decent first 2 months, two and a half months in the minor leagues for Nicky Delmonico. Mentioned Yoan Moncada, 307, 391, 470. Coming back from the bruised thumb has been a little bit of a trial for him, but he's getting himself there. Down into Birmingham, we mentioned it. Spencer Adams, 6 innings, 2 runs, 6 strikeouts, 393 ERA for Adams so far this year. Zach Collins was 1-for-4 last night as the Winston-Salem Dash got beat up by the Wilmington Blue Rocks. Although Trey Miachewski has figured things out. You hate to be sent down. Nobody likes that. But Miachewski has swung the stick well. 3-for-4 there. Luis Alexander Basabe had himself a knock in that ballgame. Micah Adolfo, 0-for-4. But the number is pretty good for Adolfo. To the slashes. Hold on. 288, 341, 448 for the 21. He's not even 21 yet. He turns 21 like next month. Jameson Fisher is playing really well since coming back. 293, 376, 455. Although I don't think Fisher had a knock in the game. Yeah, he was 0-for-3 with 2 strikeouts. Not his greatest night, but there will be more. And he's got a hell of a mustache, too. That does it for us here on White Sox Weekly. You can join us live at T-Mobile's Magnificent Mile Store, 3 to 6 p.m. on June 10th. White Sox Weekly will be live out there. We will see you there. Stay tuned. The pregame show starts at 2:35. Sox and Tigers right here, WLS AM 890. I'm Connor. Stay tuned.
You've been listening to White Sox Weekly, the official weekly talk show covering all things White Sox baseball. Listen every week for White Sox Weekly on WLS AM 890, the proud home for White Sox baseball.